Welcome to this short taster session on insurance and COVID-19. Coronavirus has caused enormous disruption and interruption to our lives and our businesses. And a key issue in the insurance market at the moment is whether or not policies covering business interruption will respond. And many businesses might be surprised to learn that their, quote, business interruption, quote, policies do not respond in circumstances where their business has been interrupted to a very significant extent for reasons which are beyond their control. And perhaps responding to public concern, the Financial Conduct Authority has embarked upon a test case in substance, a test case of sample wording at least, to bring clarity to the market. And the problem is that business interruption, the phrase, tells you in fact very little indeed about the circumstances in which a policy will respond. And that is because the purpose of business interruption insurance in the London market is generally to provide cover for financial loss, but only arising from specific insured imperils, perils in the policy. And it's often sold as an extension to a general liability policy, which is predicated upon there being at the core some sort of material damage to your premises. And then if you get consequential business interruption losses on that, then it's covered. We're going to deal with two issues. The first is that, as I say, many businesses would have bought that sort of policy. And Simon's going to talk about some cases and some arguments as to whether or not coronavirus itself could be regarded as some sort of physical damage to premises to trigger that interruption cover. And I'm going to talk about, secondly, some of the non-damage policies out there. There are policies out there which respond to business interruption without there being physical damage, but there are some difficulties with those as well. Over to you, Simon.
Thank you, Andrew. It's common for business interruption insurance to provide cover in circumstances where the insured has suffered financial loss consequent on damage to property. There has, as of yet, been no judicial consideration in this jurisdiction of the extent to which the presence of COVID-19 in a property can constitute damage, although this may well be one of the issues to be considered in the FCA test case. At first blush, the notion that the possible presence of COVID-19 can constitute damage might seem somewhat surprising. In general terms, damage can be said to arise where there is some physical change to the insured property, leading to a loss of use or an impairment in value. There is, however, at the moment, significant doubt about the extent to which COVID-19 remains present in properties. Indeed, the WHO's own guidance states in terms, "There is currently no data available on the stability of COVID-19 on surfaces. The WHO continues to monitor existing evidence around COVID-19 and will update when such evidence is available." It is, moreover, very unlikely that many businesses will have closed their operations because they considered COVID-19 to actually be present on their premises, as opposed to because of the risk that it might be, or even more likely, because they were ordered to do so by the government. However, I'm going to look briefly at three cases that might be useful in considering these issues. They are cases that arise in very different contexts, however, and therefore must be treated with appropriate caution. The first, Jan de Null, is a case about dredging in the Southampton water estuary. The dredging caused a temporary build-up of silt in the nearby waterway. The policy covered financial loss consequent on damage to property, and one of the questions was whether the build-up of silt was physical damage, such that the cost of removing it was recoverable. The answer given by the Court of Appeal was that the temporary build-up of silt could be regarded as physical damage. Now, a build-up of silt leading to loss of use is obviously very different to the presence of a virus on property. On the other hand, what this authority shows is that a temporary change to the physical state of a property may well be enough. The second case, Quorum and Schramm, is a case about a fire in a warehouse at which a Degas pastel painting was stored. The policy covered direct physical loss or direct physical damage of whatsoever nature. It was, somewhat ironically, not possible to actually examine the painting to investigate the extent of any damage without inevitably causing damage to it. However, the court accepted the expert evidence that there had been submolecular damage to the pastel, which, because it led to a risk of future deterioration, was held to be enough for the resulting diminution in value to be recoverable. The third case, the Orhula, is a case about the contamination of the deck of a ship by a leaking container of acid. The acid was cleaned up, and the judgment does not suggest that there was any lasting physical change to the deck, such as corrosion. The issue was whether the spillage constituted physical damage for the purposes of a claim in tort. The judge held that it could constitute physical damage, and that the cost of decontamination was in principle recoverable. Each of these cases arises in very different contexts, however they do supply three points that are of potential relevance. The first is that a temporary change to the physical state of a property can be enough, see Andernal. The second is that physical damage can occur on a submolecular level, in circumstances where an actual examination of the extent of it is not possible, see Quorum. And the third is that physical damage might be established by the presence of an inherently dangerous thing, such as an acid, or perhaps even a virus, without the need to show a lasting physical change to the property beyond that presence, see the Orhula. Whether these principles provide any use in a COVID-19 context remains to be seen, and it's fair to say that such arguments would probably be regarded as somewhat ambitious. However, in the absence of more specific guidance, these types of analogies may well feature in the cases that eventually emerge.
Thank you, Simon. The second issue was concerned with policies which don't require damage, and there are policies out there which provide cover for business interruption. For example, and very topically at the moment, if your premises have to be shut as a result of a government order, and or as a result of a notifiable disease. And COVID-19 was declared as a notifiable disease in England and Wales at the beginning of March 2020 by the government, probably to assist insureds making claims on insurance policies. However, a key issue arising here, which is already causing disputes, is whether or not the disease has to be on your premises, or whether it's sufficient that it's occurred somewhere in a diffuse and general way in the community. And if it does require to be on your premises, many insureds may be in difficulty, because most premises in the current lockdown were shut down not because of disease there, but in order to prevent disease from being there, to prevent transmission, to prevent people getting the illness whilst at work. And the issue is illustrated by the Hiscox wording, which the Hiscox Action Group have published on their website. And that's the second slide. And you can see that they've extracted the relevant wording for their purposes. And that provides for cover resulting from an interruption to the business caused by the inability to use the venue, the premises, following an occurrence of a notifiable disease. And the Hiscox Action Group say, well, read that, it's all fairly obvious that it's general, and there is cover. Well, before answering that question as to whether that's right or not, it's worthwhile looking at the full policy wording in relation to this clause, which is the next slide. Clause 7, and you'll see that I quoted from 7b, or Hiscox quote from 7b, but you'll see there's a range of policy triggers there, and have a look at E, for example, which is the presence of vermin, which caused the premises to be shut down, and that says specifically and expressly that that is vermin on the premises. And so there might be an argument for saying, well, if on the premises was required in B as well, then it should have said so and could have said so. And the absence of those words under B mean that, unlike rats and mice under E, the occurrence doesn't need to be on the premises, and the only requirement is for the business to have been shut as a result of an occurrence elsewhere. The other issue which arises just on that wording is the word occurrence. And insurers may wish to say that the word occurrence suggests that some form of specific incident, which can be fixed in terms of time and place, was required, and that something is diffuse and difficult to identify as coronavirus wouldn't be covered. And in insurance law, there is a bit of case law on what occurrence means in a slightly different context of aggregation, where you're talking about grouping things together for purposes of working out whether limits or deductibles have been met. And there is an argument that there is something in the word occurrence which requires something particular and pinpointed. And that might be relied upon by insurers for saying that a general pandemic without borders and without really any clarity as to where it is at any point wasn't covered. So those are some issues just arising on one clause of one policy, which are already giving rise to controversy. That's it from our short taster issue lecture on these topics. We hope that you watch this space. There will be developments in this field, and we hope in the meantime you will continue to be well and safe.